Hey everybody, and welcome to yet another OneLiner.com podcast. I'm Craig Eastman, coming to you this week for a bit of variety from the lovely city of York. In Glasgow, as usual, is Scott Morris.
Howdy.
And in Brighton's in Falkirk is Drew Tavendale.
Howdy.
Another batch of humdrum for you this week, so we'll crack on without further ado. Let's do this. The latest in a so far underwhelming line of video game adaptations, Max Payne sees Marky Mark Wahlberg take on the titular role as the New York cop whose wife and child are brutally murdered as part of a conspiracy, and whose revenge was, in the game at least, played out in a glorious bullet time ballistic ballet that didn't so much go over the top as into the upper atmosphere. So how well has it translated to the big screen, given that the game was, in the first place, a paper-thin rip-off of, homage to noir cinema? Scott, I understand you're not that impressed by Max Payne.
No, not in the slightest. The problem with Max Payne is if you are going to make a film of, well, essentially any video game, but in particular Max Payne, what brought Max Payne to anyone's attention was the fact that it was stuffed full of action. It had people getting shot everywhere. It was a fantastic action game for the computer. You would think they would then try and make an action film, a film which concentrated on the action, a thing that people want from a Max Payne film, or I would assume would want from a Max Payne film.
Keep your crazy lefty ideas to yourself.
Yes, so goddamn pinkos. What they've actually done is give us something that is based on the character of Max Payne and its world, and the plot of Max Payne. The plot and characters in Max Payne are so paper thin that it just can't support the weight of a film. And that's pretty much the problem with this. I mean, it does some things well. It captures the style of the game very well. It looks quite pretty often. It's fairly nice visual film, and being a complete sucker for that sort of thing, it's almost enough to actually carry it through. But the rest of it is very, very underwhelming. The action, when it's done, is done quite well, but it's only happened, there's only about two or three action sequences in the whole film, which just doesn't play at all well. It's not what you want from this sort of thing. That is the main complaint. The plot itself is thin, and it's more or less following the first game with some truly baffling changes that I don't think is worth going into. But it,
anything to do with Valkyries by any chance?
Well, Valkyrie is still there. There's a strange stylistic motif of which you'll see in the trailers of him, sort of dark angels coming and dragging people out of windows, which apparently just happens purely inside people's head. For some reason, in this film version, the drug Valkyrie just makes people go crazy and have strange hallucinations. So I'm not entirely sure how it got to become such a social problem and how it was so popular in the first place. The plot changes, they actually make the film make less sense than the game does quite often.
Very much so.
That's an achievement, yeah.
All in all, it's a crushing disappointment. I mean, it's probably not the worst video game-based film I've seen, but it's not even the best of a very bad bunch, so there's very little to recommend in it.
So it doesn't even manage to straddle that particularly low bar then. Drew, does that sound about right to you?
It does, although I would say it probably is the best film based on a video game I've seen, but that's very much damning it with faint praise, given that the sort of things it would be up against in that genre would be Doom and Resident Evil and Tomb Raider, and the completely awesome Super Mario Brothers.
I was going to say, you're not forgetting the genius of Super Mario Brothers, are you?
Yeah. Certainly not. I wish I could.
this film is nothing like as good as either Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter the movie.
Oh.
You're wrong. you're frighteningly, worryingly need to be seen by the men in white coats wrong.
I think I would probably like to forget those two films actually more even than Super Mario Brothers, but that medical procedure ain't been invented yet.
So having said that, it is the best, but without much challenge at all. It is just quite disappointing. I really did like the style of it. I mean, visually it's appealing and it's got some of the same sort of elements that made the game look quite nice, but utterly baffling changes in the plot, such as it is, and they just spend too long giving him a reason to go and do these things, which isn't particularly compelling anyway. And then in the last 30 minutes they said, oh, we better have some shooting then. And then it gets quite interesting. You're like, oh, yes, why could it have been like this for the hour before that?
Had the whole film been like the last 5 minutes, it would have been awesome. But yep, having been bored shitless for about 90 minutes before that point, I really didn't care about that point.
Yeah, I just wonder, if some of the changes too, I mean, you are just, because you're waiting for reaction to happen, there's plenty of time to ruminate on the changes too. And strange things, like changes that seem to have been done for no particular reason, that they're still the Sax twins, except they're not twins anymore. And one of them's now called Natasha instead of Lisa, but the other one's still called Mona. Why change that? for such an inconsequential character too, the sister. Change the name for some reason. Yeah, it's just disappointing because it could have been good. It could have been just a balls-out action film with lots of cool shooting people in the face, but they've rather ruined it.
Well, you would have hoped that's what they would have gone for, wouldn't you? I mean, sort of the general idea when you get something as insubstantial as Max Payne was in the first place is that you sort of focus on whatever made that entertaining and just crank it up to 11. But if they seem incapable of having done that, then they get what they deserve. I myself have not seen Max Payne yet, so I feel entirely qualified in saying it's crap.
Now, there is one thing I would add too, and it's something I've been a bit worried about for the trailer, and unfortunately my worries were with substance, in that while the tone of the film colour-wise and style-wise seemed right, I only got the feeling that Marky Mark was taking it all a bit too seriously, and it was, instead of doing it sort of tongue-in-cheek like the narrator of the video game, he's more just being really, really miserable.
Intense, I think, is the word you're looking for.
Well, it does some bits right. I think when he's actually doing a voiceover the way the game did a voiceover, he does that quite well. The whole, well, it's a bit in the trailer of his whole the dead underwater reaching out to him. Not
yeah,
that.
But that's only well, in about two scenes or something.
The problem with it is he then does that during his normal day-to-day life, which Max Payne doesn't do. He's actually quite a chirpy, cheeky, wide boy character.
He's quite sarcastic,
That's what makes him fun, and he's not fun in any way, shape, or form in this film. He's dull and
serious. Yeah, he's played it wrong. That's possibly the way it's written too, but he's just played it wrong. He's played it too seriously as opposed to tongue-in-cheek, which he really ought to have been, because you can't take any of it seriously.
Does he just sort of go about in a day-to-day way and narrating about himself in the past tense, like... You know, as he goes to make his breakfast.
No, because there's only about...
I walked to the fridge and got a thing of milk out.
No, that may almost have worked, actually. But no, there's only maybe one or two scenes, one at the start, one later on, I think, where he does a voiceover at all, and the rest of it's sort of normal dialogue.
And there's also, at no point does he escort Vinny Gogniti in a Captain Baseball Bat Boy outfit going squeak-de-squeak-de-squeak.
But that is in the second game, so perhaps there'll be a sequel to this film that'll have that in it, though.
I'm looking forward to it from that basis alone, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Although, actually, I suspect it's not going to be in it.
Given the Mafia weren't mentioned at all in this film, I'm suspecting
so. Yeah, they changed... The Mafia is missing entirely. They've changed inconsequential characters' names for not any good reason I can see. And apparently, it's okay to make those changes, but then, presumably as a nod to the game fans, when Max Payne goes to look up something he's got in storage, it's in Gogniti's storage, just so the name would be on screen at one point.
That's silly.
And it doesn't have that Russian dude. It always made me laugh.
Max, cutest of all my friends. Never mind. Spooky. Yeah, spooky. Ostensibly a drama about the experience of New York immigrants working in low-paid jobs, the on-paper premise of Choking Man hardly threatens to set the world alight. Some interest might be gleaned, however, from the fact that its director Steve Barron is the man responsible for the seminal videos to such 80s MTV favourites as Michael Jackson's Billie Jean and Dire Straits' Money for Nothing. His work with musical geniuses such as those and David Bowie may be seen to be tempered somewhat in later years by his direction of such cinematic favourites as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles the movie and Mike Bassett, England manager. So,
oh dear.
Oh yes. Should Choking Man's audience be awarded a penalty kick, or is Barron once more a hero in a half shell? Drew, I've got a sneaking suspicion you might be erring towards the former of those.
I think sending off for unsportsmanlike conduct.
Ooh, is it that bad?
It's terrible. It's another of those films where not a lot happens, which is kind of understating, actually. There's nothing at all happens of any consequence whatsoever.
But surely it must not happen in a meaningful way.
Alas, no. And I should point out that, particularly if anybody is aware of the films we reviewed during the Indra International Film Festival, we're not actually averse to a film where nothing happens. They can still be good. I mean, look at things like With a Girl of Black Soil. Nothing happened. One of the best films of the year. But in this, there's just nothing happens and you don't care about anybody. There's this completely miserable, pathetically shy person who washes some dishes and he fancies this woman who works there, and the film ends.
I was going to say is that he washes some dishes as his job. He doesn't just sort of wash some dishes randomly.
He washes them as his job, but that is pretty much what it boils down to. And I don't like the term loser in that it tends to be the sort of thing that crops up in American teen films, and it's always the jocks called anybody who isn't as popular as them a loser. And in this case, I think he is one of life's losers, though, and you want to just slap him. He's just pathetically shy. He's just a miserable bugger. And I'm actually investing far more emotion in talking about this film than I did for the entire running time of it.
Well, I'm sure this film speaks great emotional volumes to the massive market for cripplingly shy Ecuadorian immigrants into New York dishwashing culture. This seems to be its target audience. That's I mean, it is very film festival, isn't it? I'm pretty sure it must have been entered in the best comedy accent category.
Yeah, Mandy Patinkin's accent.
Doing basically Stavros from the old Harry Enfield sketches, and the Chinese waitress is... she's always like a couple of lines off saying that she would love you long time, isn't she? It's quite bad. Nothing much happens.
What a surprise here that this was originally released in the Tribeca Film Festival 2 years ago. It is very film festival. It's pretty much what I thought as soon as I started watching it. But again, as I said, that's not necessarily a barrier to it being any good. Unfortunately, in this case, the fact it's not any good is a barrier to not being any good.
I can only assume it got some sort of release because Choke are far more high profile films out next week, but there's one moment where it looks like it's starting to take a darker path and it could have become something vaguely interesting, except it bitches out on that promise as well at the end.
Yep.
And even then, if you're trying to build some sort of suspenseful dark edge to a character, you can't suddenly keep lapsing into fucking animations of bunnies frolicking through a field. It
very much irritated me. I mean, that was... I've no idea what they were trying to suggest by those scenes either, apart from the fact they had no place in the film. They just seemed to have been utterly pointless. Okay, there's some animated rabbits now. Why? Felt like drawing some animated rabbits. Okay. it did.
Well, I read they're supposed to reflect the main protagonist's inner turmoil.
No, they're just stupid animated pictures of rabbits.
All right, I'll take your word.
How much turmoil can a rabbit go through precisely?
Oh, have you never seen Watership Down? Those rabbits had to listen to Simon and Garfunkel.
Actually, I take it back. You can build suspense with rabbits, but it's got to be in Donnie Darko.
Yes. Or a stew. No,
or a meal.
Monty Python and Holy Grail, possibly. You can't get suspense from evil rabbits. Yeah, I did consider that it was going to go down that darker path that you sort of edges towards, but even if it had, though, I still wouldn't have liked it. I would have been kind of irritated, actually, because if it had done that, it'd been for a particularly daft reason.
To be honest, I'd rather have been irritated than just simply bored, which is what I wound up being throughout this film.
Oh, I certainly was. I mean, the only fact that kept watching at all was after I'd already been watching it for half an hour and realised there was only about another 45 minutes to go. I thought, well, I've stuck with it this long, I may as well wait till the end. But probably shouldn't have bothered.
Well, I have nothing to add, as I once again have not seen it. So, again, I feel qualified in saying it was crap. Kevin Smith is a man in need of a hit. That's a financial hit, by the way. Not a shot of heroin in the arm or a pipe full of crack. Although he may need that also for all I know. But not that he probably does, or that we have any evidence to say so. After an unbroken run of instant cult classics that saw him catapulted to revered status in around 5 seconds flat, Smith took a somewhat excessive beating at the hands of critics following 2004's Jersey Girl. An above-average sequel to his breakthrough calling card Clerks in 2006 did little to curry favour with punters or pundits, and now he brings us the desperately provocatively titled Zack and Miri Make a Porno, in which Seth Rogen as Zack, entirely unexpectedly and against form, finds himself astride a blonde beauty. Funny that. This time his conquest is Elizabeth Banks as Miriam. The two have been lifelong platonic friends, but when financial crisis comes calling, the logical thing to do is to make money filming an adult movie together. And wouldn't you know it, they both find that there may be more to the relationship than either first suspected. And so on, and so on, and so on. Guys, it seems that... I don't understand. I mean, I haven't seen Jersey Girl, but even without having seen Jersey Girl, given the string of hits this man had and the status in which he was held, to allow him to take a drubbing over what some people may perceive to be one bad film seems a bit excessive. I know you guys both thought Jersey Girl maybe not the best film of all time, but you certainly didn't feel there was much wrong with it. So the critics are once again seem to have their knives out for Zack and Miri. Are they correct this time around, or are they once again speaking crap?
Well, I'm not really sure what the rest of people have been saying about this, but Zack and Miri is very funny, and that's the only thing you can really say about a comedy.
Well, that's all that should count, really.
Jersey Girl's a great film. It's not a great film. Jersey Girl's a fine film. It's a perfectly reasonable genre piece. It's not earth-shattering. It would just simply took a hit because everyone was sick of Ben Affleck at the time. It was coming off the tail end of the whole Ben Affleck thing, and that if you look back at most reviews, it is simply because of the Bennifer thing that it got slated.
It certainly seems to be, yeah.
And so from that, you then get Smith taking a hit after saying, I'm sure he swore blind and said he'd never go back to his sort of New Jersey-based Clerks chasing Amy-style films. Then he went and did that for Clerks 2. And Clerks 2 is disappointing, not just because he went back and did, well, sort of receded to what he thought was a safe area, but also because Clerks 2 wasn't actually very good.
Yeah, and so, in fact, he went back to, and the original Clerks had been so good, and he rather did a George Lucas there and buggered up his own legacy.
I think this is quite a step up from Clerks 2. I mean, as you'll gather from the general plot, it's hardly highbrow stuff. But
oh, no.
What it does manage to do is it mixes the sort of dumb as a post tits and ass and general hooting frat boy stuff. It manages to mix that with characters that you can actually connect with. It's actually quite charming, despite the subject matter in places. I'm not sure if it's just because Seth Rogen's in it, but it often felt more like a Judd Apatow film than a Kevin Smith film.
Mm.
It has that sort of Knocked Up-esque kind of
vibe. Well, even just the trailer gives that opinion. I mean, I had just assumed it was from the Apatow stable. I mean, it wasn't until very recently that I found out this was actually a Kevin Smith film. Yeah,
It's not advertised very well. I perhaps that's something to do with what we've spoken about previously.
Yeah.
It's odd to the point where you think that Kevin Smith is box office poison, but there's also ways in which it's better than quite a lot of Smith's other films. I mean, I've been maybe not a massive fan, but at least an interested observer of Smith's work since I saw Clerks many moons ago. And one thing is, while his films are always great, I always get the impression that they were written to be read off a page rather than actually spoken by an actor. A lot of his dialogue just sounds like nothing that any man on earth would ever say.
It's that horrible contrived Tarantino era thing, isn't it, the hyper cool lingo that I'm sure a lot of people would like to think they sound like, but they don't actually.
There's like maybe one in every million people on the planet could actually come out with that off the cuff, as opposed to having to sit down and create it.
And certainly not, say, your average counter jockey at a convenience store, which is what happens in Smith's world. But this is a lot more sensible. It feels more grounded. It's sort of like he's went back to the sort of things that were in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, the sort of really silly, puerile stuff, and managed to sort of mix that with his more higher-brow comedy, and managed to sort of finally fuse them together and make some sort of style of his own, which actually works very well, I think. Yeah, it's quite funny. I have no real complaints about it. The supporting characters are sort of well fleshed out and very funny as well. There's not a single bad performance in it, even from Jay, again playing Jay but with a haircut. Jason Mewes, again just essentially playing himself.
Yeah, that's what I said when I came out of the cinema. So I was like, I don't think Jason Mewes has ever done anything but be himself.
To make a decent living at it.
Yeah, if you listen to the commentary for Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back, you're just like, you know, I don't believe he was doing that in character either. That's just proving that Jay is Jason Mewes.
It's kept him in crack for many a year, so more power to him.
Seemingly cleaned up these days, and it does actually seem more like he's putting in acting performances. Are we interested to see? I think in most of the other films where Jason Mewes has been in, he's been assigned what is credited as a wrangler. I think this may be the first film where he doesn't need one and he can actually be counted on to sort of act in a normal human way.
Yeah, he does appear to be aware of where he is and what he's doing in this film, which is a pleasant change.
Yes.
We've never stopped him being bloody funny before, but it's nice. It's like the lights are switched on behind those eyes for once. Well,
perhaps he knows why he's being funny this time round, you know.
He is truly most incoherent if you listen to the commentary on Jay and Silent Bob, and at one point he is quite literally sort of only vaguely aware of the fact he's in a room with people in it.
He just wanders off to the toilet at some point and nobody notices he's gone. He comes back you probably shouldn't have done that in the middle of a recording session, but there you go.
Yeah, Jay, stop eating that carpet.
The only vaguely negative thing I can think about this is actually probably Seth Rogen. It's maybe the only time I've seen him not seem entirely convinced of the delivery of every line that he gives. I'm not sure how much input he's had into writing the other Apatow stuff. I do sometimes get the impression that
he's written quite a lot of the stuff himself, like Superbad and stuff he wrote. And
I'm fairly sure he must have wrote all his own dialogue before, and this is what you can see when he's trying to speak someone else's words, that it doesn't quite convince as well as it has done in the past. But I mean, that's picking nits because I've nothing better to do at that point. I mean, it's still funny and it's still, it hardly makes it a bad film. That's the only thing that I can come that's close to negative in it.
Fair enough. Drew, any expansion on that?
No, I just think we're probably in danger there overanalyzing it and possibly just stick with the very first thing Scott said, which was it's very funny, which yes. Really, that's all I really want to know about a comedy. It was very funny, made me laugh a lot.
So have we actually come across a comedy this week which is funny?
We certainly have.
Well, I don't think we need to ask much more of it than that in that case. Who'd have thunk it? It's bizarre, actually. Somehow, given the sort of volume of films he's been outputting lately, I seem to have sidestepped just about everything Seth Rogen's done, apart from Superbad.
That's something of an achievement. I mean, he is very much this year's Colin Farrell / Brian Cox. He's in every other film.
Yes, exactly. I just wonder if, obviously it's not a problem for me, but I kind of wonder if maybe at some point people are going to get sick looking at him, aren't they?
Who can say? When he starts making films that aren't very funny, we'll deal with that when we come to it, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose not a problem for the meantime. Well, there you go then. I guess there's no surprise that we'll probably be recommending Zack and Miri as the best film we've seen this week. Well, I say we've seen, I haven't seen any of them. But what are we going to be looking at next week, Scott?
With A Following Wind, there'll be Choke and Body of Lies and possibly some other things if we get round to them.
All right, well, there you go then. We're going to try and bring you the gen on those. But until then, thanks again for listening. As always, I've been Craig Eastman. And as always, Scott was Scott.
Goodbye.
And Drew was Drew.
Fare thee well.
Catch you on the flip side, y'all.
Well, he's not just a cop. He's Max Payne.
He likes to watch the sunset with practiced bravado.
That's any more like Keanu Reeves with a heavy cold.